On this episode of Cross Examine, we will be discussing the Nathan Bedford Forrest statue in Memphis, Tennessee, and the attempt to move that to the Christian Revival Center here in Harrison, Arkansas, as well as birthright citizenship. Just because you are born in the United States as an illegal alien, does that guarantee you automatically citizenship under the Constitution? Stay tuned. Welcome, my friends, to another episode of Cross Examine. I am your host, Attorney Jason Robb, and we welcome you again to our show. I would like to start out, today is Thursday, and tomorrow will be the start of the 2015 Knights Party National Family Congress. If anyone out there listening and would like to show up, just go to KKK.com. It is being held on Labor Day weekend, so when you listen to it, tomorrow will be the start of it. All day Friday, then Saturday and Sunday. And so go to KKK.com and you get more information. And possibly if you can make it, not miss the event. But it's a great event. It's something that we always encourage everyone to attend. If you're not an associate of the Knights, then you can still come as a guest. And we really would encourage everyone out there, if you're a white Christian that believes that you have a right to preserve your culture and preserve your heritage, then you need to come out here. We need to stick together. Every racial group has organizations that promote their group, promote their race, promote their culture. And everyone says that's a good thing, but whenever a white person, a white group, a white organization says, hey, we want to promote our people, we want to preserve our culture, preserve our heritage, then you're considered a bigot, you're called a racist, a Nazi, and every other evil word out there that you can think of, just because you want to preserve your race. And you want to pass that on to your children. And so we always encourage everyone, come out to this event. It's a great event. It's a family time. Bring your children, and they will definitely enjoy it. There's always a children conference that coincides with the adults. But I want to just let everyone know about that. The first thing I really want to talk about is the Nathan Bedford Forrest statute. Now, we see all of this attack on the Confederate flag. We see this attack on Confederate monuments, Confederate statues. Anything that is associated with a white person, a white culture, especially in the South, then the Negroes are trying to destroy it. They're trying to take it down. They're trying smash the monuments, smash the statues, tear down the Confederate flag. And the Confederate flag really is just a representation, a symbol for white people, a symbol for our culture. And the blacks, the agitators, those extremists do not want white people to be proud of who they are. They don't want white people to be proud of their culture and heritage. As a result of that, they are doing whatever they can in order to destroy our past. Because if they can destroy our past, then our people have no connection towards the future. They don't want our children to have a connection towards the past. And Nathan Bedford Forrest, there's a statue, and it used to be called Forrest Park. And they recently changed this a few years ago, called Health Science Park. But there at Science Health Park is the Nathan Bedford Forrest Monument. This monument, if you Google Nathan Bedford Forrest Monument, you will see it's a 9,000 pound, I believe, statue of Nathan Bedford Forrest on a horse. And underneath that is the tomb of Nathan Bedford Forrest and his wife. And there has already been the City Council of Memphis to remove the bodies of Nathan Bedford Forrest and his wife and relocate them. And then, what are they going to do with the monument? Well, as a result of that, the Memphis City Council wants to remove the monument and basically give it away, sell it, do whatever. They just don't want it in Memphis anymore. And there's been a lot of organizations, or I should say, a lot of towns, several towns have requested the statue to be moved to those towns. Well, a couple weeks ago, National Director of the Knights Party, Pastor Thomas Robb, announced that he was going to request the transfer of the Nathan Bedford Forrest Monument at Health Science Park to be cared at the Christian Revival Center in Harrison, Arkansas. Now, Nathan Bedford Forrest and his wife would, of course, be moved to their original burial ground. But even at that, there's still a fear that the grave will remain unsecure and a constant threat of desecration. We got to understand that these agitators, these extremists, would love to dig up the bodies and destroy the bodies, and just basically do anything they can to ruin any memory of this great man. And so Pastor Robb has asked, he has requested that his remains, that Nathan Bedford Forrest remains as wife, as well as a statue, be moved to the Christian Revival Center in Harrison, Arkansas, where they will not be disturbed. They will be able to be placed and remain in a secure location. That request has been done through my office. I'm an attorney here in Harrison, and at my law office, we requested that several weeks ago, and we have received correspondence back from Lee Miller, who's the spokesperson from the Forrest family, as well as the city council, in which between 60 and 90 days, they will make a decision on that. And so we are hoping that that will occur, and we are very encouraged that we will be able to move the statue of Nathan Bedford Forrest to the Christian Revival Center in Harrison, Arkansas. Pastor Robb and several other members of the Knights back in 1992 held a press conference right in front of the Nathan Bedford Forrest statue over 20 years ago, because even at that time, there was a move to attack the remains of the Nathan Bedford Forrest statue as well as the burial place. And so even back at that time, many of you listeners out there who were not even born or may have been just taller yourself, Pastor Robb and the Knights were out there in the forefront leading the charge to say no to white genocide, no to the desecration of the Confederate flag, no to the desecration of Southern monuments and any monuments that represents the culture and heritage of our people. And so we are hopeful again that this will occur, and we will keep you updated on this. And so just stay tuned here in the next several weeks and months, and hopefully we'll know a little bit later. Now I want to talk about the birthright citizenship. Now, most of you have heard, have seen on TV where Donald Trump really has managed to open up a national discussion regarding the issue of birthright citizenship. Now, the idea that whenever a foreign national, regardless of legal status, which there are a few exceptions, has a child on American soil, this child automatically becomes an American citizen from birth. I mean, that's the idea. Now, this approach to citizenship has been what's called the de facto approach to the issue of anchor babies, where the children of illegal aliens who come to the United States so they can have their children here, and thus allowing the parents to remain here in the United States, as well as helping others, family members, to receive all the generous American benefit monies that they can receive from America. Now, the defenders of this unrestricted birthright citizenship primarily are found among your very extreme liberals, and some, most often your establishment and the GOP types, and some libertarians. And they argue that the 14th Amendment's citizenship clause, that birthright citizens is not only legal, but is in fact constitutionally protected. And that is what the 14th Amendment has meant all along. And that's their argument. And they often try to buttress their arguments by appealing to English common law with its historical provisions for birthright citizenships. But whatever this sort of a swim a river or approach that the 14th Amendment says, the question is, what really does the 14th Amendment state? What does it say? Is it really what English common law, which formed the basis of much of our own law and constitutional interpretation, historically upheld? And the answer to all this question is no. Now, if you look at the citizenship clause found in the 14th Amendment under Section 1, it says, quote, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state where they reside, end quote. Now, more specifically, what is at issue is the phrase, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Clearly, this clause was not intended to convey American citizenship to an unlimited pool of children born to aliens on American soil. If this had been the case, then the phrase under discussion would not have been included. The phrase, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, would not have been included. Now, obviously, there are some limits that were intended, and those circumscribed by the intent of being subject to the jurisdiction thereof has meaning. It is very crucial that we all understand what that means and what those limits are. Now, typically, it will be pointed out the limits due to this jurisdictional issue were that citizenship was not being conveyed to children born of ambassadors and other aliens employed by their foreign governments, nor was it being conveyed to members of various Indian tribes, which exercise sovereign powers within their own territories. Because Indians were, this latter, which I'm talking about, the sovereignty of the American Indians, was rescinded by an act of 1924, which granted Indian tribes full American citizenship. So up until 1924, if you were an Indian born within your own territories, you were not considered a citizen. Now, were these the only restrictions on birthright citizenship intended by the author and debaters of the 14th Amendment? That's what we really have to look at. And the answer is, again, no. Now, we have to understand what was the original intent of the 14th Amendment. And was it to grant American citizenship to everybody or certain people? Now, regardless of what we like about the 14th Amendment, the 14th Amendment granted American citizenship to former black slaves and their children. And to prevent these newly free citizens from being denied citizenship rights by certain of the southern states. And that was it. So that's what was the crux of the 14th Amendment, is to allow citizenship to black slaves and their children. And Senator Jacob Howard, who authored the amendment in 1866, clearly provided the intent of this section of the amendment. And this is what he stated. Quote, every person born within the limits of the United States and subject to the jurisdiction is by virtue of natural law and national law a citizen of the United States. This will not, of course, include persons born in the United States who are foreigners, aliens, who belong to the families of ambassadors or foreign ministers accredited to the government of the United States, but will include every other class of persons. It settles the great question of citizenship and removes all doubt as to what persons are or are not citizens of the United States. This has long been a great issue in the jurisprudence and legislation of this country. End quote. So clearly, other classes of foreign citizens were intended besides the children of ambassadors and other diplomatic personnel. And indeed, Howard's statements appear to be quite all-encompassing. In fact, if taken at face value, it would appear that he did not even intend the 14th Amendment to grant citizenship to the children of foreign nationals here legally, much less to those here illegally. Senator Lyman Trumbull, when asked about the meaning of jurisdiction thereof during the debate surrounding the 14th Amendment in Congress, stated, quote, means subject to the complete jurisdiction thereof. What do we mean by complete jurisdiction? Not owing allegiance to anyone else. That is what it means. Senator Howard agreed with this interpretation, and he stated, quote, I concur entirely with the Honorable Senator from Illinois in holding that the word jurisdiction, as here employed, ought to be construed so as to imply a full and complete jurisdiction on the part of the United States. That is to say, the same jurisdiction in extent and quality as applies to every citizen of the United States now. End quote. What this essentially means is that the Citizenship Clause, as intended by the authors and supporters of that time, of the 14th Amendment, when it was produced, was meant to apply to the children of those who were already citizens of the United States. It did not apply to those who were only under the general and incomplete jurisdiction of being foreigners, who merely happened to currently be on American soil. Therefore, the only credible interpretation of the 14th Amendment's Citizenship Clause is the one we just discussed. And so the original intent of the amendment is quite clear. Now, commentators today, of course, will freely just simply invest their own amendment and put their own naive arguments out there, just stating, well, anyone that happens to be born here in the United States is a citizen because they were born here. And some of them will use the argument and use the case of United States versus Wong Kim Ark. And that was a case that was decided by the Supreme Court in 1898. Now, this case involved the child of two Chinese parents who were citizens of China and subject to the Chinese emperor. The child, Mr. Wong, having been born in the United States. Now, Mr. Wong claimed United States citizenship was denied it by lower courts, but then took the case all the way to the Supreme Court, which reversed the lower court's decision and found in his favor. Now, on his face, this case has little really actual relevance to the issue of anchor babies born to illegal aliens on American soil. Mr. Wong's parents were legal residents of the United States, not being contravention to any naturalization law in effect at the time of his birth. And as such, they would have submitted themselves to the jurisdiction of American immigration laws and existed under the jurisdiction of the United States and its laws at that time. And not just in a general sense, but in a specific and volitional sense as well. At most, the case of Wong Kim Ark merely affirmed that the children of legal residents, aliens, became America's citizens by birth, going beyond what the 14th Amendment actually says, but still not extending birthright citizenship to those whose parents were here in violation of American immigration laws. Something which was not even put to a test in that case. And so, again, just to recap on this Wong Kim Ark case, 1898, the Supreme Court said, well, this child that was born in the United States, he was born to legal residents. They were here legally, not illegally, but legally, and therefore was subject to the jurisdiction of this court, which meant that child could become a citizen. Now, here is the argument from English common law begins. In his majority opinion, Justice Horace Gray made several extended appeals to English common law to support and sustain his version of birthright citizenship. In his opinion, he cited several earlier court cases in American jurisprudence, but placed the most weight of all upon the opinion and declaration of Sir Edward Coke, an English jurist whose ruling in 1608 on what is commonly called Calvin's case, and established the principle of jus soli, which means Latin law of the soil, and birthright citizenship. And it had a huge impact on the later American common law jurisprudence cited by Gray. Now, Gray referred to Coke's ruling and observed, quote, the fundamental principle of the common law with regard to English nationality was birth within the allegiance, also called legality, obedience, faith, or power of the king. This principle embraced all persons born with the king's allegiance and subject to his protection. Such allegiance and protection were mutual as expressed in the maxim, protecto, trahit, subject, therefore, and subject to the protection, which were not restricted to natural-born subjects and naturalized subjects, or to those who had taken an oath of allegiance, but were predictable of aliens in amity so long as they were within the kingdom. Children born of England of such aliens were therefore natural-born subjects, but the children born within the realm of foreign ambassadors or the children of alien enemies born during and within their hostile occupation of part of the king's dominions were not natural-born subjects, because not born within the allegiance, the obedience, or the power, or, as would be said at this day, within the jurisdiction of the king. End quote. Now, a word about the actual circumstances in Calvin's case. That case involved an inheritance of lands in England by a Scots lad named James Colville, born in 1606. 3 years after the union of the English and Scots crowns in the persons of James I, it had been argued that as a citizen of Scotland, Colvin could not legally own and therefore inherit English lands. Coke and the majority of jurists of the panel convened to hear the case decided in Colville's favor on the ground that having been born after the union of the monarchy, Colville was rightfully considered a subject of the English king as much as he was of the Scots king, who were of course the same person. And this was true even though Colville's parents were to be considered, along with all the other Scots born prior to 1603, as aliens with respect to England, since they were not subjects to the English king at the time of their birth. Now, it should be readily apparent to the reader and the listener in this case that the circumstances in Calvin's case and the circumstances surrounding illegal immigrants entering into America for the purpose of having their children here are very different. And it's not altogether apparent that Coke's decision in that case, and therefore any subsequent cases using Coke's decision as a precedent, such as Wong Kim Ark case that we had just discussed, that should not have any direct bearing on our situation today. In the case with Colville, you had a child who became a citizen of the realm of England, not because his parents traveled to England, but because England, in a sense, came to Scotland. Further, it can't be said that Colville's parents were aliens who did not owe loyalty and obedience to the person of the king. They did when he was still only the king of Scotland. And it's important to note that another legal principle which Coke's decision established was that obedience and fealty were due to the sovereignty of the king himself. And if you transfer that to our system today, to the people of the United States. So it's not a geographical expression. Obedience, which Colville's parents still had toward James VI of Scotland. So in essence, this Latin term jus soli does not involve common law birthright citizenship on the basis of geographic location, but on the basis of subjection, obedience, and loyalty to the sovereign power that rules over the geographic location. One became a common law citizen upon birth in England, not because one's parents were domiciled in England, but because one's parents were subject to the English king while in England. So, according to Coke's arguments, this cannot apply to either the children of ambassadors or others in the business of a foreign sovereign, nor to those children born of English soil, but only circumstances which set the parents against the sovereignty of the King of England in some way. Now, it is this principle of loyalty and obedience to the sovereign power which ultimately destroys any arguments in favor of the children of illegal aliens being natural-born citizens upon birth within the geographic boundaries of the United States. If you will note that from the citation with Justice Gray's opinion that we just quoted, a key provision of that enabled child born of aliens on English soil to receive birthright citizenship was that the parents were aliens in amity. And what that meant was they were subject as foreigners to the laws, and therefore sovereignty of the English king. To be a foreigner and to be perpetually disobedient to the laws of the king meant that was not an alien in amity. This principle was also seemed to be implied in Blackstone's commentary, when he actually seemed to affirm that there was no citizens to immigrate at all. And he observed this when he's, quote, "natural allegiance is therefore a debt of gratitude which cannot be forfeited, canceled, or altered by any change of time, place, or circumstances, nor by anything but the united concurrence of the legislature." So, we would, of course, disagree today that this argument essentially would forbid the immigration of citizens from one nation to another without the agreement of both sovereign powers. However, within Blackstone's argument dealing with natural law and citing universal law, we can see that, again, allegiance is owed to that sovereign power, not to any place or accident of geographic location. And so what all this comes down to is when illegal aliens cross the borders, they are coming here in violation of our laws. They are coming here for the sole purpose of to violate our laws, to destroy our laws, and as a result, they are not obedient to the laws. And to be subject to the jurisdiction of the United States, you have to be obedient to the laws of the United States. Running across the Rio Grande, jumping over a fence, does not make you automatically a citizen of the United States. Having a child does not automatically mean you are a citizen because you're born here. If your parents are not citizens of the United States, if they did not have legal status, if they are here illegally, that means that a person born, a baby born here in the United States, is not a legal citizen. Because your parents have to be here legally. That is the whole concept under the 14th Amendment when it talks about a subject to the jurisdiction thereof. And so we have to look at the intent of those framers of the amendment, of the 14th Amendment. We have to look at the historical principles of common law. And everything points to the fact that when you are an anchor baby, you're not entitled to be a citizen of the United States. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and we will see you next week. And remember, you have the right to exist.